Recently, I sat with Joan Haviland and her children to prepare for the celebration of life for her husband, Dick Haviland, who's a parishioner here at Spiritus. One of the things I always want to know about a couple is how they met. So I asked Joan to tell me their story. Joan told me that they met when Dick was in a college band at Marquette University called the Haviland Group. There happened to be a show, where Joan was playing two legs of an octopus when she met Dick, who was playing in the Haviland Group band. There were other people playing the other six legs. They became friends, and as fate would have it, they found themselves snowed in at school. They were hanging out in the student union and decided, hey, why don't we go across the street together to the theater? So off they went. Well, while at the movie, Dick, who had only been a platonic friend at this point, slips his arm around Joan during the movie. And Joan told me it was at that moment that she thought to herself, hey, maybe this relationship is going in a different direction. That direction led them to 62 years of marriage. Palm Sunday is the beginning of Holy Week, where Jesus slips his arm around humanity and says, I have come to take this world in a different direction. You see, for centuries, the church has been snowed in with old ideas about God, power, the use of violence, and our social responsibility to each other. In essence, we've reduced our responsibility to the world by simply becoming a structural hub for people in need to come and receive prayer and salvation, good preaching, and good music, all of which I love. But while we have great worship services, we undergird them with old ideas about who God is and what role as the Church of Jesus that we're called to play in the lives of the poor and the marginalized. So instead of teaching the true essence of God as a loving mother or father, we've taught God as an angry judge, always looking to catch you coming up short, to punish you, to burn you in hell and keep you in eternal agony if you don't do the right thing. Anybody ever heard that theology? We gather with old ideas about preference and discrimination that has marginalized people of color historically, people with disabilities, women, and children in our religious gatherings, while centering men as leaders and pastors and apostles and bishops and fathers of the faith. How often do we hear the church tell us about the mothers of the faith? Creating room for boys and males to be altar boys and priests. And if you're a girl, you can sing in the choir. Maybe you could cook the priest's meal and maybe even do his laundry. We even gather with old ideas around power, preferencing hierarchies, heterosexuality, status, while marginalizing people with diverse sexualities and people on the bottom of the social ladder, blaming them for the problems in our society. You see, being snowed into these old ideas are dangerous because ultimately they sanction the practice of human violence, exclusion, discrimination, oppression, apathy, and cognitive dissonance. So when Jesus shows up riding a donkey down the streets of Jerusalem in protest of these ideas in his political climate, it is a big deal. He knows that protesting is the antithesis of being apathetic, complicit, callous, and passive. It may look like on the outside like a parade, but if you look a little closer, it is a procession where people aren't simply bystanders throwing their cloaks under the donkey and waving their palms. They're throwing in something much more significant as he passes by. They're throwing in their hopes and their dreams for a new future with this new Messiah, this new leader, this nonviolent servant king. This Jesus procession was different, friends. They were familiar with military parades and processions. There was another procession, in fact, on the same day, entering Jerusalem, coming from the opposite direction than Jesus, with Pontius Pilate on his horses, his war horses, signifying a very different kingdom, a very different future, one where violence rules, proportionality doesn't matter. One where fear and military power and strength is hailed and celebrated, signaling that Rome is in charge around this peace. But Jesus knew that Rome could not be in charge of God's kingdom or God's people. So he organizes a protest procession on the opposite end, coming in on a donkey. No military, no weapons, no fear, no intimidation. Just a procession protesting all the systems that caused human suffering, all the rules that caused human exclusion, poverty, isolation, and insecurity. Rome took exception to any messianic claim to rival its rule or its kingdom, and Jesus knew that. To disrupt Rome's claim to power at a time when no kingdom on earth could rival the power of Rome, and yet there was our Jesus. So if you're wondering whether protests are holy and sacred work, and where we can find Jesus in times of protest for the poor, just remember him on Palm Sunday as he stages his final protest. The holiness of protesting isn't strange, though, to this community. We have stood up for farm workers, women, the LGBTQ+ community, for Black Lives to Matter, for the poor, children, asylum seekers, and many, many more vulnerable groups. In fact, many years ago, Spiritus was engaged in protesting nuclear arms. And so a group of Spiritus folks showed up to the nuclear plant. And many of you may remember Dorothy McAvoy. She was about 80 years old at the time, and she scaled the fence and got up to the top. And she realized that they didn't have a ladder to get down on the other side. And it was a 10-foot drop on the other side. So security didn't quite know what to do. Do I let this 80-year-old lady fall to her death? Or do I help her down and be seen as aiding and abetting a protester? Well, Dorothy put them in a dilemma, and they chose to help her down. But you know, Dorothy is my hero because at 80 years old, she knew the holiness of speaking up, of showing up, and standing up to protect life. In today's political climate, we're witnessing plenty of protesting. Just this week, I attended a city council meeting where members from our community showed up in hundreds of all ages protesting the ongoing war in Gaza, calling for city council members to support a ceasefire resolution to be sent to President Biden. In response to their protests, the meeting was quickly adjourned by those in power, and the building was announced to be now closed, announcing that the council members would plan to return at midnight to finish voting for or against the resolution. Now, thinking that this would rid the chamber of the protesters, it only reinvigorated them and their resolve, and they simply sat down on the floor and they turned city council into a sit-in. I was transported back to the lunch counter sit-ins. There was something so holy about the room now. Despite that sometimes as Christians, we have been taught to believe that protesting is sinful or too disruptive. It's only something that young, uneducated, unemployed liberals do just for the sake of causing trouble. I can't tell you how many times I've been part of protests and somebody comes along and says, get a job. I'd be like, I got a job. These protesters were doing Jesus's work. You see, the term protesters can invoke strong opinions depending on whom you talk to and in what context. The word can invoke feelings of irritation and annoyance and even anger, all things that Jesus was very familiar with. I witnessed some of these feelings by people who walked out of city council chamber, who saw these protesters as a problem and not the issue of saying enough of women and children being casualties of war. Like anything, protesting can be used for ugly and horrific purposes. It can be motivated by hate or rage or violence and vengeance. like what we saw on January 6th, or it can be used for change, to call us to take a different direction like we did in 2020, when thousands of us hit the streets protesting for Daniel Prude, for justice for Daniel Prude, and calling for changes in policing. And so as we look at the gospel and the life of Jesus, his life has always been one of protest and not just a life of parading. Jesus in his life today shows us that protesting is a holy act of righteousness. And when we protest, we send the message that something is out of order and going in the wrong direction. So Jesus shows us the sacredness today of protesting. And not only is it sacred, but it is sanctioned and it is sanctified. It wasn't too long ago as 3,000 of us marched for justice for Daniel Prude, and we knew, we felt it, that Jesus was very present. As we spoke up and we showed up and we stood up for Black Lives to Matter in this community and for justice for Daniel Prude. And so today we are much closer getting Daniel's law passed as a result of your work, a law that makes sure that mental health crises are treated as a public health issue, not a public safety threat. To build a meaningful mental health response system outside of the police. To remove police as the default first responders to address mental health needs. And finally, the law will create councils of people with lived experience and mental health experts dedicated to the goals of de-escalation, trauma-informed, culturally competent care, and avoiding contacts with the criminal legal system. We are that close. When the church's theology and actions matches the people's hopes and dreams for fairness and justice and grace and mercy, something magical happens. I marched alongside young people who thought that they had no use for religion until they saw pastors marching alongside of them. That one act gave them hope and faith in God again. 2 years ago, I was asked to be the keynote speaker at St. John Fisher for Marv Mitch Scholarship Talks. And after I gave my talk, a young man who I noticed held back during the Q&A came up as the line cleared out. And he said to me, "You don't know me, and I'm not very religious. In fact, I don't even go to church. But I heard that you were speaking here tonight, and I came because I wanted to say thank you. I was one of the protesters that your church took in that night. We were being attacked by the police, and your church gave us sanctuary." And with tears in his eyes, he said, "I just needed to come and say thank you." And he walked away. But you see, I knew that he was grateful for something much deeper than just me. He was grateful for God being present in the struggle with him, as God always is. That experience of the church coming alongside those seeking justice and love and compassion made faith real for him. And so Jesus has always exercised that kind of journeying with those on the bottom who have experienced hunger. And then he responded by feeding them. When they were sick, he responded by healing them. When they needed compassion, he refused to judge them. Attention, when they felt invisible. This experience they had of Jesus is what turned his protest procession into a deep praise in the hearts of the people. They remembered how he showed up in protest throughout his ministry for the things that mattered. He began spending 40 days and nights in the wilderness, rejecting the temptation of worldly power, and boldly stood against Satan's temptation. As a protester, he could empower the people and go all the way with them, reminding them of how much they are loved. As they waved their palms, they remembered how Jesus asked people to follow him, to join his cause of liberation, challenge, forgiveness, and healing. He made sure women and children were on his team, protesting the idea that only men were called to be his disciples. He protested the status quo. They remembered how he stood in protest, speaking truth to power in synagogues and proclaiming things so countercultural and radical that he created a mob that was so furious with him that they tried to push him over the cliff. They remembered him confronting the leaders about their wrong practices and evil thoughts and destructive deeds, breaking religious expectations and laws of the day so that people could be healed, people could be fed, and have a chance to thrive and stay connected to their God. Jesus. Jesus made public proclamations, and he tried to change social sentiment through talks and teachings and speeches. Jesus emphasized and advocated for the oppressed, the hurting, the abused, the downtrodden, the abandoned, the alienated, and the victimized, because Jesus was a protester. Jesus needed Pilate and the world to know that a new nonviolent servant king was taking this world in a new direction. A place where we would love each other as siblings, fight for each other's well-being, regardless of where we live, the color of our skin, or our political beliefs or fears. It would cost him his life, but he knew that we were worth it, and he knew that Friday was not the end of the story. Jesus put his life on the line for us, friends, for you, for I, for the world, so that we could let go of the old ideas that often hold us back from our best selves. He knew it was important to let go of being afraid of God, because God is love. He knew it was important to let go of violent solutions, because peace is the way. To let go of apathy, because we are built with hearts of compassion for one another. To let go of inequities and divisions, because we belong together. And so he came to show us the way, enduring mocking, incarceration, mob counter-protests, physical abuse, and abandonment. Jesus found comfort in knowing that Friday would not be the last word. So ultimately, he knew that God would have the last word, and that stances we take for a better world and a better direction are necessary, despite the backlash that we might encounter. We must stay the course and love and bring new life, because anytime we move with Jesus in the direction of love and new life, there will be backlash, but that can't be the thing that deters us, because it didn't deter Jesus. This week, the prison outreach, because of the stance that they took for 40 years ago to walk with those in jail and in prison for reentry, you may have heard, received a $2 million grant from a foundation, and I am so proud of them. Yes. For years, they protested the idea that the world had that those who are incarcerated have no value. They worked tirelessly as these brave men and women turned their lives around. Not only do those who have touched our justice system have value, but they are lights shining brightly in this community, teaching us all the value of recovery and reentry and humanity. Jim Smith and his staff, they never gave up on the dreams of the men and women in our outreaches, and they stood on those dreams when it wasn't popular. You see, Jim Smith's inspiration is always Jesus. He lives with the reality that Jesus never gives up on us. And we celebrate Jesus in the streets today with the crowds, because he's the one who feeds us, guides us when we need it. And today we see him protesting for us and for the world, so that we might know God's love, we might know God's peace, God's forgiveness, and God's desire to place God's arm around us and lead us in a direction of hope for our world.